Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Front Lines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. On the 5th of August, 1945, during World War II, on Tinian Island at about 2:10 a.m., seven American aircraft took off for Japan. One of the aircraft was a specially modified B-29 Superfortress, the Enola Gay, carrying the Little Boy atomic bomb headed for Hiroshima. The next day, the bomb was dropped, killing about 140,000 people in the first use of a nuclear weapon in warfare. The bomb was a uranium fission weapon, and the yield was about that of 20,000 tons of TNT. 60% of the city was destroyed by the blast and the firestorm that followed. It's not the most devastating bombing attack of the war, but the economy of the effort involved only sending one plane on a mission to destroy a whole city shows only too well the complete change in military and political thinking that had begun. One more bomb had to be dropped before Japan surrendered, ending World War II. Oh, and our Coast Guard's birthday is the 4th of August. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is, of course, Marine vet Skip Coriel. What have you been up to, Skip?
Oh, Colonel, it is summertime, harvest time. We're already starting to harvest. We're picking zucchinis, lots of beans, canning beans. I'm looking at our grape orchard. The grapes are really big and green. They're getting ready. You know, from August all the way into November, we're pretty much picking and canning and dehydrating food, getting all ready, for the winter, because I have to feed, you know, all these little kids I got running around here, Colonel.
Well, it's true. You got to feed them and they want to eat. Okay, here's what we have for you today. A news and comment by the Colonel. I'm going to discuss our very weak response to Russia's illegal blockade of Ukraine's export of food to a very hungry world. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Next, the Vice Commandant of our U.S. Coast Guard, Admiral Stephen Poland, will join us to honor our Coast Guard on its birthday. And retired Coast Guard Captain and past University President Tom Haas will discuss leadership. And Army vet Bob Hensler will discuss being an Army Ranger.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or do it on Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Front Lines of Freedom. Of course, we'll start with the news. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, remember that non-certified COVID shot that was forced on everyone in our military? Damage to the heart is more common than thought after receipt of Moderna's COVID-19 booster, a new study indicates. One in 35 healthcare workers at a Swiss hospital had signs of heart injury associated with the vaccine mRNA-1273, researchers found. It occurred in about 1 out of 35 persons, or 2.8%. In a generally healthy population, the level would be about 1%, the researchers said. The long-term implications of the study remain unclear, as little research has tracked people over time with heart injury after messenger RNA vaccination.
Isn't it time to admit that the mandatory shots were a huge mistake and to welcome back into our military those we threw out because they wanted a religious or other exemption, and to restore the promotions that were denied? It's time for honor and honesty from our leaders.
Our Navy has a commissioned fleet of 71 nuclear submarines. There are 53 nuclear attack submarines, 14 nuclear ballistic missile submarines, and 4 nuclear cruise missile submarines. In 2020, 28% of our Navy's nuclear submarines, or 20 nuclear attack submarines, were out of commission. In 2021, 33% of the Navy nuclear submarines, or 23 nuclear attack submarines, were out of commission. By 2022, that number had increased to 37%, or 26 nuclear attack submarines. And by 2023, 40%, or 28 nuclear attack submarines, are out of commission.
Our Navy's 43 operational nuclear submarines are opposed by hundreds of communist Chinese, Russian, Iranian nuclear and diesel subs. Our Pacific Fleet submarine commander has, quote, committed to broadening the diversity, equity, and inclusion of our submarine force, but hasn't made any comments about any plans to bring 40% of the Navy's out-of-commission nuclear submarines to an operational state of readiness. This wokeness is bad.
It seems significant, Colonel.
Yep.
Wow. Well, late last month, Senate Democrats blocked a measure that would have stopped the Biden administration from discriminating against Jewish-made Israeli products. The Democratic members of the Senate Commerce Committee rejected a measure from Senator Ted Cruz that would have blocked the Federal Trade Commission from penalizing products produced by Israelis living in contested territories, including the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and Golan Heights. Cruz offered the measure as a stopgap amendment on legislation granting the FTC broad new powers to issue fines and other penalties to any online vendor that does not accurately disclose where its products are made. Supporters of the anti-Semitic boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement have long worked to strip the Made in Israel label from products manufactured in so-called settlements, which they argue are not technically part of Israel.
Hey, Israel is our only true ally in the Middle East, and maybe they're our most reliable ally in the world, and they're the only real democracy in the region, the only non-dictatorship. This anti-Semitic nonsense ignores the reality of that part of the world and makes the Middle East more dangerous, and we really don't need that.
And the USS Boxer, one of the Navy's amphibious warships, is struggling to get to sea despite recently coming out of a maintenance period that cost the Navy $200 million and was supposed to ready the ship for the service's newest fighter jet. The Boxer was supposed to go to sea on July 21, but couldn't because of ongoing maintenance issues, said Commander Arlo Abrahamson, a spokesman for the Naval Surface Force. The Navy did not offer details on what issues specifically kept the ship in port, citing operational security. But Abrahamson was clear that the Boxer's preparations for sea trials identified additional maintenance requirements before the ship could get underway. The problems for the Boxer come out at a time when they should be least expected, about a year after the ship left a maintenance period that began in the summer of 2020 and cost $200 million, according to the contractor for the work. The most notable upgrade was a new deck that would be able to support the new F-35B Lightning II strike fighter. However, the ship also received work on its hull, as well as tank and mechanical work and other shipboard improvements, according to BAE's statement. The ship began its service in the Navy in 1995, nearly 30 years ago.
Now, I understand that unexpected things happen, but after 2 years of maintenance being surprised by something new, and this when this much of our submarine fleet's inoperative, something's really wrong here. Something's wrong.
And a U.S. Navy veteran airman who served our nation in two wars took to the skies over the heartland again late last month. "I live to fly," Donald Muncy, 100 years old, said after soaring over the cornfields in Town Square of Urbana, Ohio. "I was raised on aviation. It's always great to get in the air. It was a beautiful flight," he said. Muncy, who served in both World War II and in Korea, took cell phone video and snapped photos from the front seat of the open cockpit in the 1942 Boeing biplane, piloted by Dream Flight's founder Darrell Fisher. They took off from Grimes Municipal Airport in Urbana to celebrate the organization's 6,000th trip with an American World War II hero on board. Muncy's 20-minute flight was witnessed by a crowd of about 100 patriots and well-wishing spectators not far from his hometown of Springfield, where he graduated from high school in 1940 and still lives today.
That's awesome. Congratulations to Navy vet Muncy and to Dream Flights. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share some comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some more wisdom. Then we'll talk Coast Guard with Admiral Stephen Poulin. At ease, troops, take a break.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your home defense tip of the week. One item you should keep in your bedroom at all times is a military-grade high-lumen flashlight. I've raised four teenagers, and I've learned that just because someone's sneaking in your window at 2 a.m. doesn't mean you want to shoot them. That bright flashlight will immediately blind the invader and readily identify whether they are friend or foe. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. To make an understatement, the message we're sending to the hostile nations in this world is not one that we can be proud of, and there's truly something wrong here. Okay, 1 year ago, Russian President Vladimir Putin agreed to stop blockading Ukraine's grain exports and fueling a famine in both Africa and the Middle East. The day after signing the UN-brokered deal, Russians shelled Odessa's port facilities as if to warn, don't think this deal protects you. And exactly 1 year later, Russia pulled out of the deal, once again threatening global food supplies. Putin is playing a game of food blackmail, trying to get Western countries to loosen sanctions on certain Russian banks if they want the Ukraine grain deal to start flowing again. Canada rightly called the renewed blockade, quote, the weaponization of hunger by the Russian Federation, end quote. You know, clearly starving innocent people is not a concern for the Russian leadership. So if any Western leaders still nurse fantasies about talks with Putin to end the war in Ukraine, his disdain for the grain deal proves they're fools. And once again, Putin's hunger games are reinforced with missiles. The recent deafening attack on the middle of the night with drones and cruise missiles, the harshest in Odessa since the war began, destroyed most storage facilities for sunflower oil and some grain silos. Not exactly military targets. Many civilian buildings were hit by flak from the shot down missiles. Locals were warned that more missile attacks were expected in the next evening. Russia claimed the strikes were in response to a Russian sea drone attack on the Kerch Bridge connecting Russia to the occupied Crimean Peninsula. Don't believe it. Putin is sending two messages. First, if the world doesn't pay his price, he's willing to starve poor nations. Second, if he's not permitted to control Odessa, he's willing to destroy it and damn any repercussion to a grain-hungry world. What else could he be trying to say? For many years, the imperial-minded Putin has been obsessed with Odessa because it was founded in the late 18th century by the Russian Empress Catherine the Great, who's one of his role models. However, Ukraine's largest port was never really an ethnic Russian city. Its harbor was built by a Spaniard, its first governor was a French aristocrat, and its longtime position as an international trade center produced a diverse population. Hey, before World War II, about 30% of Odessans were Jewish. Today, it's flooded with refugees from Russian attacks on eastern cities and towns, and the horrific flooding caused by Moscow's criminal destruction of the Novokakhovka Dam on the Dnipro River. Although the city has been battered, it's kept its special spirit. Some mothers and children still eat ice cream by the small pool in the city park, young women parade their fashions, and the elderly watch the young. But the city's strangely quiet. The tourists are gone, and many residents have fled. Odessa's a port city. It can't live, nor can the country's farmers continue to plant its famed grains and sunflowers if the Russian blockade is maintained. Ukraine will be virtually landlocked and its economy permanently undermined. Yet the Russian Black Sea fleet has effectively taken over control of the southern Black Sea and the connected Sea of Azov, blocking not only Ukrainian grain, but other key exports. Seven countries border the Black Sea, including NATO members Turkey, Romania, and Bulgaria. And Russia's militarization of the sea is illegal under international law. Amazingly, NATO nations, including our nation, have let Russia get away with this takeover. And China's Xi Jinping, who's trying to do the same thing in South China Sea and the Taiwan Strait, is certainly watching closely. He's clearly waiting to see if the West and the UN will bow to Putin's food blackmail and these sanctions to reinstate the grain deal. Oleksiy Goncharenko, a member of the Ukrainian parliament from Odessa, responded on how he thought NATO nations should respond to Russia's actions. Looking out at the threatened harbor in the distance, he responded with anger. Why did the free world let this happen? He asked with vehemence, pointing out that Moscow essentially militarized the Black Sea when it seized Crimea in 2014 and made the peninsula into an armed dagger pointing at Ukraine? Goncharenko believes that Turkey, a NATO member and co-sponsor of the grain deal, should provide armed escorts for grain ships. Ideally, Istanbul would permit an exception to the 1936 Montreux Convention, which controls maritime traffic through the straits, joining the Mediterranean and Black Seas, and bans most warships. This would permit other NATO members to join Turkey in protecting the grain ships from Russian attacks. Well, gee, our nation just sent a large number of Marines and three or four warships to join some of our existing jet fighters to deal with Iran trying to stop shipments of oil and other items. And we're letting Russia get away with this? There's a message here, and I think both Russia and China can see that we're not going to oppose them. Why doesn't the free world say to Putin, just try to attack ships under Turkish, British, and U.S. flags? Goncharenko asked. Putin sees the NATO hesitation, so why can't he use the same kind of blackmail in the Baltic Sea? Why can't Xi do the same thing in the South China Sea? Goncharenko's asking the right questions, but he was rebuffed by political officials from NATO countries when he tried to raise the convoy issue at the recent summit in Vilnius, Lithuania. It appears that everyone is waiting and hoping that Turkey can somehow talk Putin into re-entering the deal when he visits Ankara this month. I believe it'll take much more than Western pressure, including at the UN General Assembly, to end Putin's Hunger Games. Perhaps only NATO armed grain convoy escorts can do so. If the West gives in to Putin's food blackmail, we'll all pay a price. It'll be far dearer than the increased cost of grain. If we take a very strong stance now against Russia's blockade of Ukraine's food exports, we'll be sending a message to China. And if we don't, well, we're sending a different message to China. It's time for America to stand against these evil attacks on innocent people. I wonder if we will. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
There was a lot to see a week ago at the world's largest air show called Air Venture in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. The week-long show was attended by nearly 700,000 people and over 10,000 aircraft. The airport saw 22,000 aircraft operations, which is an average of 148 takeoffs and landings per hour. You know, this is the only place on Earth where you can see 380 flying warbirds all at the same place. My favorites have always been the military flying boats, and they were well represented. The craziest one to me is what's called the Grumman Duck. It's a biplane mounted on one shoehorn-looking float that's directly under the aircraft. And of course, the granddaddy has got to be the Grumman Goose. The Navy and the Coast Guard arm them with depth charges and use them for anti-submarine patrols off the U.S. coast. These aircraft were so popular that they were used far after the war as both airliners and cargo planes. But the most famous of all the flying boat warbirds is certainly the Consolidated PBY, or the Catalina, with 2,554 of them being built. The popularity wasn't just with the U.S. military, as many were used in military service from Canada, Britain, Australia, New Zealand, the Soviet Union, and many other countries. The wartime record of the PBY was legendary, and they saw extensive service in both the Pacific and the Atlantic theaters. And now, nearly 80 years later, they're restarting production of this amazing aircraft. The new version will be the largest and most capable amphibious aircraft in the world. So why start up manufacturing of amphibious aircraft such as the PBY? Well, 71% of the Earth's surface is covered by water. So an aircraft like this can be employed across the entire spectrum of operations by way of land, air, and sea. Can't wait to see what one of these things are going to cost. I'm betting there won't be very many in private hands. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I really enjoy your comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss our Coast Guard with Admiral Stephen Poland. Then we'll talk leadership with Captain Tom Haas. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some boxing. Box three rounds, take a break, box another three, then stand at ease.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act, so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are concerned veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Please do send me your thoughts and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome Vice Commandant of our Coast Guard, Admiral Stephen Pollan. The Coast Guard's birthday was this past Friday. It was founded in 1790. It's been around a while. So thank you for joining us today, Admiral.
It's my pleasure, Denny. Thank you for having me.
Sir, start by telling us about your time in the Coast Guard. When and why did you decide to join? What were some of your more interesting assignments?
Yeah, great question. I grew up the son of a career Air Force officer. Actually, he was enlisted for half his career and finished up the second half of his 27-year career in the Air Force. And I always thought I would be destined for the Air Force. But the more I researched the Coast Guard, the more I understood its missions, the more I was attracted to it. You know, the life-saving nature of it, the humanitarian nature of it, the law enforcement aspects of it. And I thought I could serve in a unique and different way. And I was an athlete in high school, and I knew I couldn't play Division I sports, but I felt I could play Division III sports. So in a weird way, that influenced it as well. And I will tell you, I entered the Coast Guard Academy in 1980, and have continued my service for almost 40 years of commission time, you know, graduated 84, so sneaking up on 40 years of service. And I've just been incredibly blessed to have a mix of frontline operational assignments, including service afloat, and also incredible opportunities to move the Coast Guard forward in different staff assignments as well. So I've just been absolutely thrilled and honored to continue this journey for almost four decades now.
Well, sir, I certainly understand what you said. The fact that you were focused by your family on serving and that you found something that was more interesting for you that's cool. And wouldn't it be great if everybody did that? Okay. Let's get started on the history of the Coast Guard. I think it started out being called the Lighthouse Service. Do I remember that right?
Actually not. Now, we absorbed the Lighthouse Service at some point in our history, but we started out in 1790 with one of the first acts of Congress creating what was then called the Revenue Marine. And in fact, we can trace it back a little bit further to Federalist Paper Number 12. Alexander Hamilton, who we consider the father of the Coast Guard, wrote in Federalist Number 12 that a few armed vessels judiciously positioned at the entrance to our ports might be made useful sentinels of the law. And so that was the concept of the Coast Guard. And then the first Congress authorized the construction of 10 cutters for the Revenue Marine. And we were an armed service, we're a law enforcement agency, and really that's the inception. And as our experience grew, our history grew, we started absorbing other agencies, the Lighthouse Service being one of them. The U.S. Life Saving Service was an independent service that joined the Coast Guard in 1915. Steamboat Inspection Service, Bureau of Marine Navigation, all of those friendly takeovers through the course of our history really shaped the Coast Guard's mission portfolio today. I guess in some way we could trace our history back farther because of the Lighthouse Service, which was established before 1790. But really it's 1790 that was that critical inflection point for us as a U.S. Coast Guard and as a seagoing service.
And that was a very logical growth, wasn't it? That the Coast Guard slowly just took over the responsibility for our coasts. Coast Guard, I guess that sort of makes sense. That is what happened, isn't it?
It is. In fact, when you look across our allies and partners who have a Coast Guard, much of their Coast Guards replicate us. Not all of them have the same sorts of missions, but most of them, in many respects, resemble us across that portfolio of maritime safety, security, environmental protection, sometimes our service or not, but also the law enforcement. And I think that's telling about the wisdom of creating the Coast Guard today, because other countries want to replicate what we have.
Yes, sir. And I am fond of saying this because my friends who are Coast Guardies taught me this, but in time of war, the Navy becomes the hardcore of professionals around which the Navy gathers. There's a little truth in that humor, isn't there?
Yeah, we like to say that. We like to say the Coast Guard is the hard nucleus about which the Navy forms in time of war. Actually, we've got a tremendous relationship with the other sea services. Just a few years ago, we signed a tri-service maritime strategy that talks about the unique aspects that both we, the Marine Corps, and the Navy provide to the joint force. In times of war, as you said, and based on declaration of the president, can become an element of the Navy. That hasn't happened since World War II. We're proud of our history as an armed service. That's part of who we are. But we think we can operate independently under our own organic authority to support the joint force. And we do so. We do so every day.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing our Coast Guard with Admiral Stephen Poland. Okay, the Coast Guard has many roles. You've alluded to several of them. Let's just walk down the list. You have multiple roles in law enforcement, and well, you've just covered them. Just take us down your list, sir.
Sure. It's we have 11 statutory missions, and it's hard to really describe those. I will in a second, but I think the best way to capture it for people who may not know the Coast Guard well is that we protect America from threats delivered by the sea. We protect those on the sea, and we protect the sea itself. And so that's sort of a wavetop view of what the Coast Guard does. When you look at those 11 statutory missions, I think the one that most people recognize the Coast Guard for foremost is lifesaving. That is why a lot of us joined. The humanitarian nature of the service, saving lives at sea, protecting those in distress. We're a law enforcement agency. We are the nation's federal maritime law enforcement authority on the nation's waters, both the internal waters and the oceans. Most people understand that we do drug interdiction. That's one of the primary missions under our law enforcement role, taking that poison off the water before it can reach the streets of our communities. We also do marine safety. So we ensure the safety of ships that are carrying cargo into U.S. ports. 90% of goods that come to this country are carried on commercial vessels. Most people don't know that. And we'd like to say that every state is a port state. If you're in Oklahoma, you care about port safety and port security because you got a Walmart. And the stuff that they sell at Walmart had to come in through one of the U.S. ports. So we like to say every state's a port state. But we're the ones that ensure the safety and security of that maritime commerce. I'll tell you, Denny, the U.S. Marine Transportation System, this is a system that supports maritime commerce, is a $5.4 trillion benefit to our gross domestic product every year. So it contributes $5.4 trillion to U.S. GDP. And it's the Coast Guard that ensures the safety and security of that transportation system. I mentioned before, we're an environmental organization. If there's a oil spill or a hazardous substances spill into the nation's waters, we're in charge of overseeing the cleanup of that. We break ice. We are America's presence in the Arctic and the Antarctic. We break ice on the Great Lakes. We break ice in New England to make sure that ferries and vessels can get into port. And, you know, and that sort of captures the essence of who we are. You know, if you see a buoy on the water or an aids to navigation, like a day board or a range tower, the Coast Guard's established that. And we maintain it. So in a nutshell, that's sort of the mission portfolio of the Coast Guard. And I like to say there's something for everybody. If you want to join the Coast Guard, you can have a unique contribution in any one of those different mission portfolios. You can switch between those mission portfolios at all times. We wear the hats that give us the authority over each one of that those mission areas.
That's amazing. And I know you only just gave an overview because we don't have the 2 or 3 hours for you to go to all the details.
It's long.
But my Coast Guard friends and relatives have assured me that there's an awful lot there. Well, there's more to discuss about our Coast Guard, and Admiral Poland's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yep, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's the money I do, well, twice a week. Then take a break and stay in the area. We'll be right back.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
GNS, a Korean-owned company operating in North America, will be supporting an effort to honor and respect the veterans who fought in the Korean War. This effort is done in conjunction with an organization called Project Soldier. Project Soldier is a nonprofit organization based in the U.S. and Korea. Since 2013, it has been taking photographs and videos of Korean War veterans all over the world. GNS North America is honored to host Project Soldier August 6th to 15th in Michigan and Ontario. Project Soldier wants to interview and take photos of these veterans. They will then receive pictures and have their experience memorialized, which proudly tells of their sacrifice for freedom. If anyone knows any Korean War veterans nearby, please contact Joshua Roberts at jroberts@gnsauto.com. jroberts@gnsauto.com.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Admiral Stephen Poland, the Vice Commandant of our Coast Guard. So we've been talking about the different roles that our Coast Guard plays. One of the big things in the news today for a couple of years is the huge influx of illegal aliens over our southern and sometimes northern borders. But the Coast Guard's been playing the illegal alien game for a long time, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, we consider this a fundamental life-saving mission. These are people who are desperately seeking opportunity for them and their families. You know, they faced tremendous hardship in their home countries, but they're taken to the sea in vessels that should not be at sea, contraptions, conveyances that are not seaworthy. And for us, it's about saving lives. Yes, it's about ensuring the security of our maritime border, but we want to interdict these humans and provide them safely back to their country of origin. In doing so, reinforce that the right way to immigrate to the United States is through an orderly and legal process. But for us, it's really about saving people who should not be in unseaworthy vessels. And I will tell you, we see human tragedy each and every day for some of these people. There's been a lot of death, a lot of lost individuals who are trying to enter the United States with these unseaworthy vessels. And so we're maintaining vigilance in the approaches to the United States. And we're focused on rescuing as many people as we can and encouraging them to seek an orderly and legal pathway to the U.S.
That's really part of the same thing as taking care of smugglers, drugs, and that sort of thing that wants to come in that way, too. So I suspect that keeps you guys somewhat busy.
Yeah, well, we certainly look at drug interdiction as a pure law enforcement mission, not a search and rescue mission like maritime migrant interdiction for a regular maritime migration. Drug interdiction is about taking the bad guys off the water, the people that are trying to bring that poison into our communities. And these are criminals. These are transnational criminal organizations. They're commodity agnostic. You know, they want to smuggle people. They want to smuggle drugs. They want to smuggle money. They want to smuggle weapons. And for us, it's about ensuring that the oceans are used for lawful means. You know, there's got to be a rules-based order to the oceans. Otherwise, that rule-based structure falls apart. not only is it about protecting our communities, protecting our kids, it's about ensuring good maritime governance across the globe.
And, you know, that's something that I know I've heard a lot about, but I live in California and Florida and Texas. And so talking about the Coast Guard was something that we did, and we were glad they were there. In the process of doing that, I would suspect that most of the time you do not get involved in shooting at or being shot at, though the risk is always there. Is that a fair summary?
Well, it's a very risky business. There's no doubt about it. You're dealing with drug smugglers. I'm not sure you have to think harder than that on how dangerous it is. But, you know, we've got the force protection in place. You know, one of the things that we did, I think it's a mission that we started probably 15, 20 years ago, is we started the helicopters that are on back of our Coast Guard cutters. We started putting sharpshooters in those helicopters. We call it airborne use of force. There's a protocol we have to work through. You know, if we see a drug smuggler, we hail them to stop their vessel. If they don't stop after warning, we can fire warning shots across the bow. If they don't stop, then we actually try and fire into the engines to stop the boat. And it's very effective, very effective. And so that's really mostly how we employ force in the maritime domain for drug trafficking. But it's a very dangerous business. But I'll tell you what, we've got professionally trained Coast Guard boarding officers and boarding team members who are judicious in the use of force. They're professional. They are just incredible public servants that do this mission day in and day out. And I'm really proud of them.
Sir, you just really hit the nail on the head. The ones that I know make professional look like almost not an adequate word. They're really professionals, and I can understand why you're proud of them. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Admiral Stephen Poland. Sir, let's start summing things up. Take a couple of minutes now and talk about what you would like our listeners to just take away from our conversation today about our Coast Guard. We celebrate the birthday, but you guys have been there protecting us for centuries. Give us a sum up, will you?
Yeah, we're proud of our 233 years of service to the nation. We're a relatively small service of about 40,000 active duty members, but I think we punch way above our weight class. We punch above our weight class in protecting America. It's safety, it's security, it's economic prosperity. But even though we're locally based, we're globally deployed as well. Our partners and allies want to work with our Coast Guard. Some of their greatest national security challenges are, they fit within the mission set for the Coast Guard, whether it's climate change, whether it's security, whether it's transnational crime, whether it's disaster response. We call this the era of the Coast Guards. And we're proud to work with our allies and partners to ensure global maritime governance. But we're focused on ensuring the safety, security, and economic prosperity of America. And we've got 40,000 active duty members, 8,000 civilian employees. We've got 6,000 members of our Coast Guard Reserve and 30,000 members of our volunteer force called the Coast Guard Auxiliary. These are people who volunteer their time. And I couldn't be prouder of the people that we have focused on doing Coast Guard missions day in and day out. I want people to know that their Coast Guard is standing the watch. We're remaining vigilant for America. And as Alexander Hamilton said back in 1790, we are the sentinels on the front lines of the maritime domain, protecting this nation.
Yes, sir, you are. I was looking at my notes from talking with a commandant about 8 years ago, and the note was that at that time, there were two seagoing ice cutters, one of which was used for parts for the other one, and that if it ever needed help, we needed them from the Russians. But there was some more being ordered. Do you have more afloat today than just the one seagoing icebreakers?
Well, we've got one medium icebreaker called the Healy. In fact, it's underway right now, heading towards the Arctic. And then we've got one heavy icebreaker called the Polar Star that can work both up in the Arctic and the Antarctic. So we really only have two, one heavy and one medium. And we are losing ground to peer competitors for icebreaking capability, the ability to provide persistent presence in what we call the high latitudes, whether that's high latitude south or high latitude north. And fortunately, with the tremendous support of Congress and the administration, we are embarking on a campaign to build new heavy icebreakers. We're calling them polar security cutters. They're being built down in Mississippi. The construction has been a little bit delayed because it's a very complex ship. Just think of the thickness of the steel you have to break through ice. We haven't built an icebreaker in this country since the 1970s. So the shipyards had to retool. We've had to redesign. So it's a challenging ship project. But I will tell you, I'm excited about the future. I'm excited about getting these cutters in the water. It's going to take a while, but we're going to gain ground here very quickly.
That's awesome, sir. Final question. I know there are listeners who might be interested in either joining our Coast Guard, either as an enlisted person or as an officer. Can you take a minute and talk about how they would do that?
Sure. The first thing is Coast Guard's hiring. So if you want to join, please reach out to a Coast Guard recruiting officer, a Coast Guard recruiter, or a Coast Guard recruiting center. Go online to our Coast Guard website and we'll direct you to the right people. I encourage you to join. I will tell you, Denny, if I had the opportunity, and I mean this sincerely, this is not propaganda, I mean this sincerely, if I had the chance to do this over again, I would do it without hesitation. This has been an incredible career, an incredible journey for me and my family. The opportunity to serve the nation in a military service with unique missions, the missions I described earlier, has just been incredible. There is something in the Coast Guard for everyone. If you want to be in law enforcement, if you want to be in disaster response, if you want to be in cyber, if you want to inspect ships, if you want to be on a Coast Guard cutter or Coast Guard boat, or you want to fly in a helicopter or an airplane, whatever you want to do, there's a place for you in the Coast Guard. So please join. We need you. We need the best and brightest of America to join our Coast Guard. And we want to have a Coast Guard that reflects all of the American public that we serve. We want you to see an opportunity for you in the Coast Guard. We want you to achieve your full opportunity. So please reach out and think about joining the Coast Guard. We'd love to have you, and I'd love to serve with you.
Admiral, thank you. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. Thank you for our Coast Guard. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Denny. Thanks for having me. And to all the listeners, thanks for your tremendous support of the Coast Guard. We're hard at work for you. Thank you.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking leadership with retired Coast Guard Captain and College President Emeritus Tom Haas. Then retired Army Ranger Bob Hensler will discuss the Rangers. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones. Grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.